What's going on, Seven Figures Nation? Today's show is coming to you with a very important topic that is continuing to become more and more important for startups and small business owners, which most of us are in this community. Today, we have a special guest. We have Laura Bell Main, who specializes in securing a lot of Australia and New Zealand's fastest growing organizations. We're talking cybersecurity, you guys. She's got over 20 years of experience in software development and information security. It's her mission and passion to bring security into organizations. And in 2024, this has never been more important with so many different hacks happening to major organizations and putting some small businesses out of business. Laura is the founder and CEO of Safe Stack Academy, an online education platform offering flexible, high-quality, people-focused secure development training for fast-moving companies with a focus on building security skills, practices, and culture across the entire engineering team. Safe Stack is a value-driven company on a mission to make cybersecurity accessible for everyone in any organization. Laura, welcome to the show. We're excited to have you. We've never had anybody with your skill set on.
There are over 32 million businesses in the U.S., and over 90% of them will never break seven figures in annual sales. So how do we as entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs break into that seven figures club? This podcast will relentlessly share the secrets, strategies, and tactics I've used to create three multi-seven figures businesses and bring in even more successful entrepreneurs than me to share their inspirational stories and tactics to success. You can create your dream business in life right now. So buckle up and let's go.
Fantastic. It's lovely to meet you, Leo. Thank you for having me. I'm hoping you all be the nicest criminally minded person you ever meet.
And that's what we need. We need to start thinking about who these people are and what the way they think so that we can make our businesses secure, because there's no way to go out of business faster than to have a massive, you know, cybersecurity breach. And obviously that's important. Before we jump into that topic, it's so important. Let's talk about your background and what led you towards becoming an entrepreneur. Were there some key events as you were growing up, as you were, you know, getting into the job market? What led you to say, hey, I want to be independent and go out there and make a difference on my own terms?
I envy all of the people I see on TikTok and whatnot now who are all like, I have a plan and this is my mission. I'm going to go and build my thing. I'd like to call myself an accidental entrepreneur. I have two young children. One is 11 and one is 5. And when the 11-year-old was just shiny and new in the world, I had a job. I went back to work and my boss was a jerk. And I went, you know what? Screw it. I'll just do something for myself. And so with $300 and some fairly stubbornly held opinions about how we could do security and not get in the way, I literally wheeled my little office chair from home down the main street in Auckland and started making phone calls. And I've been doing that now as a business, not so much in services anymore, but about 11 years.
Oh, amazing. And obviously New Zealand, a very amazing place. My business partner proposed to his current wife there, you know, years ago.
Aww.
And you've probably seen that little picture on windows that used to be that had like the arch and the ocean. I used to love that.
Yep. Cathedral Cove.
Just a beautiful, beautiful area right there for sure. So that was what led towards entrepreneurship, independence. And that's why I find a lot of the times the path we go, we have a bad experience with someone who's in charge of us, who shouldn't be in charge of us, but welcome to corporate America. And then with the ability to go independent, you know, you have an opportunity to make a real difference. So that being said, what led you to go towards the industry, the niche, such an important, growing, impactful industry of cybersecurity? Was that your background, or was that just, you know, something that you kind of got into over time? Or what led you to choose that as kind of the niche that you wanted to serve people in?
So I started out my career many, many moons ago. I hide it with hair dye and, you know, face cream now. But many, many moons ago, when I was 16, I started as a junior software engineer doing COBOL for tax systems in the UK. Now, that was because I needed a job. I had no great desire to build software. I didn't really understand the industry at all at that point.
Yeah.
And about 5 years into that, my boss noticed that I was very good at looking at systems and processes. And I was that curious person who was like, cool, yeah, there's three buttons. What happens if I push them in the wrong order? Or what happens if I do this? And I've always been very creative and playful like that. And he was like, Laura, we love you. You're nice and all, but please stop. This is awful. Don't just stop pressing the buttons.
Don't push the buttons.
Exactly. And he was like, look, if you really like pressing the buttons, there's this whole group of people called security people. And that's what they do. They push buttons in unusual ways and they find out what goes wrong. And so I was hooked. And so I went on to be a penetration tester. So breaking into systems to find the flaws so you can fix them. A red teamer, which is more objective focused. And then in later years, bringing my software development background together with my offensive security background to help very fast moving companies do security to grow their companies and to scale without getting in the way of their core objectives.
Amazing. And we've all seen a lot of news clippings and headlines out there of different organizations that have a cybersecurity breach or a hack. Could be even things as important as utility and power grids, et cetera. But for many small business owners out there, they don't know what they don't know. Where are some of the places that they are most vulnerable that they need to start checking into this, not tomorrow, but, yesterday?
Right. I'm going to start with a caveat because I'm going to speak directly entrepreneur to other entrepreneurs.
Perfect.
Our brains are going to get in the way of everything I am about to say, because you're an entrepreneur, which means you love dopamine. You love solving problems. You love the hustle. You love the chaos of it. You wouldn't be doing it. Otherwise, you'd have a job for someone else. Now, when your brain loves dopamine, it finds boring processes and simple things really kind of, well, not that interesting. So the sad thing about security is that 80% of the attacks we see, all of them around the world, can be summed up as an opportunistic attack against a common or easy to exploit vulnerability. Now, anything that says common and easy to exploit, your brain's going to go boring, because we're talking about things like locking down your accounts, updating your software, these kind of things that are just good hygiene. But like, if I was to ask you, Leo, and I'm not going to ask you for your passwords, but if you think about all the passwords in your life, have you got a password you know you shouldn't have anymore?
I do on some accounts, absolutely.
Yeah. I have passwords that are old enough to start school, and I know I shouldn't have them. I'm a security person. But there's a reason that we choose silly passwords or we reuse passwords. And it's these behaviors, those little shortcuts we take, that actually leave us exposed to these opportunist attacks where they don't even know who you are. It's just you have an account on a system they know has value, and then they'll use their access to then go and say, oh, what can I do next? And that could be social engineering, that could be account compromise, it could be damaging your reputation, whatever they're able to do at that point.
So you know how a lot of us have Google Chrome and we use that to browse the internet, and that has the password manager. And I noticed a few months ago as I was going in there looking up one of my passwords that I couldn't remember, and it said something about some of the passwords had been compromised. How did that happen? What does that mean exactly?
All right, I'm going to break this down. I'm going to try and avoid going deep and nerdy. So, Leo, your job here is to go, oi, get back up.
We'll put it in layman's terms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give us some details.
So for normal people. So when a website stores your password, it stores it not as the password itself, but it transforms it in some way, and then it stores that transformation. Now, those we call password hashes. Now, when a website is broken into, when it is compromised, one of the things that's commonly taken is the list of all of these password hashes. And what our attackers have been able to do is that there are over a billion password hashes that have now been stolen. And what they do is, in their spare time,
a billion have been stolen.
It's breathtaking. So many. And what they do in their spare time, when we're doing things like watching Netflix, they will try and generate different password combinations. They'll do the transformation and see if they match one of the hashes. Now, what's happened is this has been going on for a very long time. So we now have this almost a dictionary of known passwords that we know people use on sites. And at the same time as having those passwords, we have these big lists of email addresses. And so what people are doing is they're using these stolen passwords and these identifiers like email addresses to then log into accounts and take control, which is why it's super important that when we're creating passwords that they're unique, that we haven't been using them before. And the most important thing of all, you can ignore all other advice apart from the length. The length of that password is the most crucial thing to keeping it safe.
The longer the better, I imagine.
Yeah, and like long is a tricky word, right? Because you'll talk to your friends and I've got a long password. It's 10 characters long. No. We're talking 30. Now,
Oh,
that sounds
30
horrible.
is what? Wow,
We're
30. Okay.
Yeah, so your brain
Wow,
has already,
30
everyone at home has gone,
characters.
oh my God, I cannot do this. So here's
Yeah,
a bit
I
of a
thought
hack
10
for
was
you.
long.
Exactly.
That is not long.
So
30 is. Okay.
you've got two choices here. If you want to get super long, let's give you two, one really easy thing for things that don't matter and one slightly more complex things for things that do. So for the sites that don't matter, so I signed up for a newsletter, I'm, looking online, I just need an account. Pinterest is a good example.
Right,
There's no business
right.
need for that. Don't try and set a complex password. When you sign up to an account, literally mash your keyboard randomly for as long as you can be bothered. So it's really good and long. Copy paste that in and then forget that password ever existed. The next time you log in, just use a forgotten password mechanism and just get in that way. That way, you never have an old account with a silly password you've reused elsewhere.
Gotcha.
The second way for those more important accounts is, yes, we can use a password manager or let the browser suggest that password for you. That can be really, really powerful. And if that's your jam, go for it. If it's a password you need to remember for some reason, for example, you're typing it frequently, or it's a password that you're using on devices that aren't easy to use with a password manager, then I want you to use your inner karaoke, your inner car disco brain. Now, what I mean by that is all of us have a song that we're guilty of singing along to in the car, top of our lungs when nobody's watching. And those lyrics to that song are already quite long, and I can promise you, you don't know them properly. They're your own special interpretation of what you think that person is saying. So, using things like a song lyric or a quote from a movie or a mantra or a saying that's unique to you, it has punctuation in it, has spaces and full stops, periods, that kind of thing. It has uppercase and lowercase, and it will naturally be 30, 40 characters long. So, there are ways to
Good
choose your
point.
passwords that can make this a lot easier if a password manager isn't the way for you.
Spaces. I bet a lot of people don't even realize they can use spaces in their password.
It's the forgotten special character.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. So to begin with, when we're talking about security, it's accounts and it comes down to passwords. And those passwords need to be unique. They need to be especially in important accounts where you might have money or business situations, then you better make sure that those are very difficult and long. And it sounds like even random. And why shouldn't they be? I mean, the password manager is going to remember it for you, and it's going to be almost impossible for somebody to be able to guess that when it's just so random like that. Now, I believe, Laura, a few years ago, it seemed like it was maybe more commonplace for a hacker to try and gain control of your computer. Is it more often now that the issue is actually that they just hack into specific accounts that are on the cloud that are server based for that company and not necessarily getting into your computer? Or is that still something that happens too, that they're able to access your computer?
So, there has definitely been a shift. It did used to be that people would, try and plant malware on your machine, and that still happens.
Yes.
It's still a thing, particularly if you're running an older operating system, such as, old unsupported versions of Windows and things. These are really opportunistic, easy attacks. The software to compromise them is very commonly available, so it's an easy win for an attacker. But if you think about how we use computers, that's changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Lot.
I mean, 10 years ago, kids and life aside, I had primarily still got a desktop computer in my office that I was just coming back to that same machine. The number of files I stored on the machine rather than out somewhere in the cloud was much higher. A lot of my interaction with technology had a local element as well as an online or cloud element. And I think very aggressively in the last 10 years, most of us now move between devices fluidly, and we trust our accounts and our files and our documentation are there waiting for us in those online tools. Now, that's an opportunity for an attacker because if you can move between devices easily and get access to your stuff just by logging into an account, then logging into that account is now a very powerful thing. The other side of this is your operating system. So whether it's Windows or Mac OS, it doesn't matter. There's a lot, there's big teams of people who are continually looking for keeping that secure, and that's come a long, long way. So there's a lot of security controls now in our base operating system. But if you look at the software we use online, some of it's built by huge companies with big security teams. Some of it's built by companies just like your audience, who perhaps aren't quite as mature or don't have as many people to pay attention to this. And so every piece of software isn't equal. Every online account doesn't have the same level of controls. And as a user, we don't often get visibility as to what those are.
Yeah, no question about it. As you, look at some of these different computer operating systems and mobile operating systems, is there a preference in your mind of a system being more secure than another? Would you say is an Apple iOS system on a Mac, is that actually more secure or less secure than Windows? Or is it about the same? How would you classify that?
I'm going to guess. I think we're vaguely similar ages here, Leo, and some of your audience might be of similar age. Do you remember the old adverts, the Mac versus PC adverts from like
sure
ancient
do.
History?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And everyone knew which they were. You're a PC or you're a Mac. And there was this big culture of Mac people, particularly, and I love you all, but you did feel pretty smug for a period of time that, you know, Macs don't get viruses. Macs don't have security problems. Now, what was really happening there was business. Now, if you're an attacker and you want to maximize the return on your investment, and your investment is the time to compromise a system, you're going to go after a system that has the most users. So
For
back in
sure.
ye olden days, the primary software that was on desktops in enterprises all over the US and worldwide was Windows. And so there was spectacularly higher effort going into attacking Windows than there was Macs.
Sure.
Because at that period of time, if you attacked a Mac, sure, you could compromise it, but you've got 50 graphic designers in San Francisco. That's not that exciting as a target. Now, things have changed substantially. Now we're seeing much more divided split between operating system users. I'd say if you were able to work in super constrained conditions and you didn't care about using other people's commercial software, then there's probably an argument for some weird form of Linux being the most secure. But do you know the best, most secure operating system you can use is the one that you know how to use well, that you keep updated, and that you remove the software you're no longer using frequently.
Super important. So the updates that your computer, that your mobile devices are asking, you've got to be on top of those, because those updates are generally debugging and securing the device and the system. And when you don't do those, then you're open and you're vulnerable. And so that's super important to understand. So for entrepreneurs and small business owners out there who are growing fast and they know they need to get cybersecurity right, it's a risk. But some of them, you know, think in their minds, oh, you know, nobody has anything on their computer hard drives. They're just using Google Apps and they're using Salesforce for the CRM, and they might have a phone system. So if they're just using those things in those big cloud companies, I think they have a false sense of security. Where are they actually vulnerable, and what are the actions they can take so that they are securing things? Because like we've talked about at the beginning throughout this podcast, if you have a cyber breach, then it could literally, you know, just bring your business to its knees.
Yeah. And I'm going to start with a bit of empathy. You know, when you're an entrepreneur, when you're running something that's small and slightly chaotic and young, you're going fast. And we already think in risk. Like, entrepreneurs are risky people. That's what we do. And we already know the risks to our business. And many of those top five risks are things like cash flow. And can I make payroll?
Cash
and I'm,
flow,
did I screw up my taxes this year?
Right.
Because those things really are going to kill you quickly if you screw those up.
Oh, yeah.
So we can be forgiven in these smaller organizations for kind of looking at yet another risk and going, cool, well, I'll add it to the list, but you know, there's items above this. Now, what we have to do is find a way to add it to the list and manage it in a way that's not going to take our time and focus. So let me start by talking about the common attacks and the reason somebody might attack to make it quite realistic. And then let's talk about how we would take actions to make security
Perfect.
Something that we can set and forget so that
Yes.
we're not having to do lots of it ongoing. So let's talk about the common attacks. Firstly, we have to remember it's not personal. Most of the attacks against younger companies are not because they know who you are and you're semi-famous and, you know, you're interesting to them. You just happen to be using a technology that they have an exploit for or they have access to, and they're trying to see what they can do. Now, if that's in your inbox, most commonly, we're seeing really unsexy attacks like invoice fraud or whaling, where you might impersonate the CEO and ask somebody else to do something in the company or in its financial systems.
It's funny you mentioned that, because that happens almost weekly, where one of our team members will get some sort of text message from somebody saying, it's me, and you know, you need to do this, you need to click on this link, or you need to go withdraw some money for this thing. And they'll Slack me, because we use Slack, and I'll be like,
yeah.
Did you? No, I would have Slacked you if
yeah,
I needed
I don't
you to
email
do that.
You.
And I never would have needed
yeah.
you to do that. So it's funny, but those, they come off so effective, and they know who's
yeah.
working at your company, and they know that you're the founder or one of the managers or whatever. And
yep.
if you're not paying attention, you're in trouble.
Absolutely.
So
and
that,
if,
that's
think about
really
the
what entrepreneurs need to be aware of, and they need to educate their team to be aware of that.
Yeah, and also watch their stress levels. So if you're having a really calm day, it's early January, you're just ramping up for the year, you're going to have the
Right.
headspace to go look at everything that comes in and goes, yeah, this doesn't look right. But if it's, you know, there's a big deadline coming up, you're all pushing super, super hard, you're
Yeah.
running context switching all the time, and you see something, you're going to make your decisions much, much quicker than in those slower time. And when we make fast-paced decisions, often, if there's a sense of urgency or importance, we can miss those details that would show us that it's a scam. So be careful of your stress levels and your urgency in the company, that you're not encouraging people to make snap decisions without verifying. You always want to be encouraging people to take that extra breath and just validate on an internal channel. Hey, is this you? And if it isn't, that's cool. But everyone now knows that this is happening and that they can watch for it too. The
Yeah.
other thing we can do is, your business is made up of lots and lots of systems. Our attackers, often, if they don't want to directly influence themselves financially, get some money from you or whatever, they may want to use your resources to do something that serves their purpose. So I'll give you an example. You're going to have people out in the audience who are using AWS or Azure or whatever to host websites and things. That's great. Wonderful. What if you're an attacker? What could you do with that resource? Well, I could use that to serve malicious software. I could use it to mine Bitcoins. I could use it to do all sorts of things. And so what we want to do here is, we're going to go, right, they don't know who I am. They just want a server to do this on. So I'm going to make this really difficult for them to do. Now, I have a personal story from about 9 years ago now. I publicized an AWS key by mistake. I'd been coding in the middle of the night, which you should never do anyway. It was like the comedy of errors. And
Yeah.
this little key was public for 6 hours. And when I woke up in the morning, I had a lovely email from AWS who said, hey, we tried to take that $4,000 from your credit card, but we couldn't. So we're going to try again tomorrow. I was like, you what now? My AWS bill is normally like $4. And it turns out that there's little automated scripts out there that look for passwords, that look for AWS keys, this kind of thing. And they automatically spin up Bitcoin miners in regions in your accounts, or they
Oh
automatically
my
use your
gosh.
resources for their criminal intent. And so you spin up these things and suddenly you've got this bill. So even if, like, no data has been harmed, financially your business can be impacted, because suddenly you've used all these resources and you've got a credit card statement that says actually your bill is, you know, 1,000 times more than it should be.
Oh my goodness. That's crazy. Yeah, I remember a couple years ago, my wife's Venmo account got hacked, and I think it cost us $1,500, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah,
wow.
These things, that's how quickly, and we weren't even sure. It's just, they must've just guessed her password. I mean, that's the only way I can think of how it happened, or there was a data breach. I don't remember if PayPal or Venmo would have had a data breach, but that's how these things happen. And I think almost everybody out there has a story, individually, as a business owner, like, these are the things that happen. Now, one of the things that a lot of business owners aren't aware of is, as you make these investments and improve your cybersecurity, there are some upsides. Not only, of course, that, you know, hopefully stopping the negatives from happening, but there's also innovation. There's even revenue streams. How can those things take place as you make cybersecurity a priority?
That's such a good question. So the biggest thing that happens when you embrace cybersecurity is, firstly, you start asking questions. Do I need to do this? You know, the simplest way to secure any system is just not have it. The simplest way to secure data is don't have it at all. Don't store it. And, you know, that can actually create a really streamlined business. If you're like, actually, we don't need 15 accounts for this. Let's just have the two. We don't need to store 16 years of data. We're not using it for anything. Let's just keep the last 6 months. Now, there's some circumstances like taxation where we have to keep it for a period of time,
Sure.
but that's actually quite rare. Now, many
It is
laws
rare.
say that you have to protect
Yeah,
data, but they
exactly.
don't specify that the maximum length of time that you can keep it for. They say a minimum. So impose this on yourself. Just get rid of things you don't need. The next thing is if you're B2B, if you're selling to larger organizations and you're smaller and scrappy, what they're doing during that sales process is they're assessing you for your maturity. Because what they're asking themselves is, by buying this and creating this relationship, am I putting my larger organization at risk? So when you embrace security, even by just doing the boring basics, but doing them consistently over time, that's things like your passwords and updating your systems, what you're communicating to these larger customers is we are less risk to you. And when you are less risk to a large organization, they're more likely to buy, or that buying process will speed up considerably. Because in procurement in particular, they're very focused on managing risk versus the value to the business versus cost. And so you're taking care of that risk bit and giving them confidence.
Now, Laura, we also have a lot of side hustlers in the that are in the audience here. And I know you serve a lot of small business owners, but you also help people who want to become developers and understand the opportunities, which are great there. What are some of the opportunities for cybersecurity software developers in today's world?
Oh, it's huge. Now, firstly, if you are listening and you're like, I do want to build that side hustle, go build it. You're going to have so much fun. There is some incredible software being built right now from sensor technology in fabrics that can measure, your skin temperature and all sorts, through to, things in health and transport. And even if it's a simple thing you have in mind that just helps you, I bet you there's lots of other people like you who need it. So go forth, have an adventure. Now, in cybersecurity itself, there are nowhere near enough of us. Now, we did a survey as an organization late last year, and we found on average there was less than one security person per 500 people in an organization.
Oh, that's
Now,
crazy.
we call this, and it sounds a bit tongue in cheek, so forgive me, we call it the Batman problem. Now, we're all used to the idea of the Caped Crusader coming in and saving us from all of the bad things in the world. And that's what security people have become, the Batman. They're going to come in, save you from all the security problems. But I'm going to ask you this, Leo. We're in Gotham City. There are five crimes going on at once, three murders, two robberies. Which one does Batman do first?
Maybe the one that's closest to him?
Maybe. What happens to the rest of them?
Well, hopefully Robin can help out.
Maybe, but even then, we start running out, and suddenly you've got a to-do list,
Yeah,
or
you're going to
like
have to leverage a team in technology somewhere.
exactly, we're going to end up with a Jira backlog somewhere for those who, have fallen into that trap. No person, no matter how superheroic they are, can protect us from all of the security things that we do. We
So
have to
true.
be less focused on superheroes. And if I was going to choose my spirit animal, I'm actually not a superhero person, but meerkats are amazing. Now, you can tell it's January because we've gone from superheroes to meerkats in a minute. But meerkats, as a population, they take shared responsibility for the safety of everyone in the little group of meerkats. And they all take it in turns to be vigilant, and they all report things when things happen. So we need to embrace that. It needs to be a collective sense of security where it's not 500 people and one security person, it's 500 security people and one person who's got the really big tools for when we need them.
Exactly. So we're talking about it, your team being educated, and there should be
Everyone.
regular cybersecurity training within your organization, no matter how big. And I think for everybody listening up to this point, Laura, that's their question, right? Like, I know this is I need to make this a priority. There's so much that I don't know. Obviously, you're an expert and can help us with that. Where can they go to find some solutions? What's the step they can take today to start making this a priority and locking things up?
So the first thing you can do is, as leaders, your company will follow you. So whatever you choose to do in your behaviors, if you are the one that's going, oh yeah, I know the process says this, but this time I'm going to break it and do something else, everyone's going to assume that's okay. And in security, it's really dangerous to set those behaviors, set that precedent. My company, we have a training platform, but there's many, many out there. But as a starting point, we provide completely free, no tricks, no credit cards, free awareness training for up to 50 people. So 10 modules, everyone in your team
Awesome.
can do their training, get the job done. Nice. Everyone's going to learn how to do their passwords well, how to manage their devices. And we do that not because we're trying to trick anyone, but we're doing it because we genuinely believe that all businesses, including smaller businesses, need to do security. And many of the systems and the techniques and the tools that are out there are built for much, much larger organizations. So even if you're just one person with a side hustle, just jump on to, and then we'll share the link in the show notes, I'm sure, at safestack.io. Just jump on, sign up, and do your basic training. That way, you might find that there's a few things you can do to keep your little business healthy and happy so it can grow into a much bigger business.
Guys, again, this is not a passive podcast. This is an action taker podcast. So make sure you go to safestack.io. And there's so many resources and tools. There's a free trial there. There's information. There's the free training, as Laura alluded to. And the sooner that you and your team start taking action towards this, the better. And it's something your family needs to be aware of, your kids, your spouse, partner, everybody needs to be, you know, making sure we live in a digital world and it's got to be secure.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Well, perfect, Laura. The final word is yours. You brought so much value. We really appreciate everything you brought to us today. If you would tell us a few places the audience can connect up with you online, in addition to safestack.io, and maybe the final word as well.
Fabulous. Well, wherever you are, whatever you're building, security matters because we all want to do something good in the world and we want to survive a little bit longer. So don't see it as a big, scary monster. See it as something just, you just got part of doing it and it can be really easy. So embrace automation, embrace doing it the easy way. It's not lazy, it's efficient. Now, if you want to connect with me, you can find me on LinkedIn where I post all sorts of things. So do connect there and on the other major social media platforms. I have a book that I co-authored with my co-founder called Security for Everyone, which is a literal step-by-step playbook of taking you from security for one person through to a growing company that's looking to IPO. So if you're on that journey, it's like $35. It's nothing. And it's everything that we used to do as consultants and charge thousands of dollars per day for, you can have, you know, for $35. So go nuts. My mom's very proud of the book, if nothing else. And other than that, just stay safe out there. And the more we talk about security and normalize it, the more effective we all become at it. So don't just do it in silence. Talk to your peers, talk to your other entrepreneurs in your network, because you might find that they have a solution or they've encountered something that will be useful to you.
Perfect, everybody. That's it. That's laurabellmain.com is Laura's website. And of course, substack.io. And her LinkedIn is Laura Bellmain or Laura Bellmain as well. So I love connecting on LinkedIn. Gary Vaynerchuk says it's the most underutilized platform out there, especially if you're B2B, which many of us are. So check that out. And Laura, thanks again for being a guest on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was so much fun.
Are you looking for more seven-figure secrets, content, or even how you can launch your own recession-proof business? Then check out sevenfigures.com. That's the digit 7, figures.com, where we share more videos, stories, strategies, funding solutions, entrepreneurial education, and even the secret business type that's recession-proof. Thank you for listening, and if you're finding value in our podcast, please give us a 5-star and invite others to join the club.